ita ita ola ndipiko hama zangu muri Zimbabwe tunamkamchira mchongo chetu chechiki ushelo the connection lelami o Mike Wobe. What's good Zimbabwe Muse, welcome to the connection, a Studio 7's very own youth program that targets tackling anything and everything youth related. This program that you tuned into right now is the connection, brought to you by Studio 7 Voice of America on Tuesday the 18th of October 2020. Muri Zimbabwe mthakazo muhle. I'm your host Mike Wobe. First order of business, Muri Zimbabwe, unfortunately, tine urombo silusizini impela. Due to COVID-19, we're working from home, so unfortunately, this is a pre-recorded program. What this means is you cannot call in as per usual, and of course, this program is not live. But you can still send your comments on WhatsApp per number +1 202-465-0318, or you can tune into our video broadcast and leave your comments in the comment section of three Facebook pages of VOA Shona, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Studio 7. Just name Muria Zimbabwe, Tripa no Sisonke like so. Pano Pachirongo Chenechevich Iki, Ushelo, The Connection, Lilami, Umaik Wobe. Tonight on The Connection, we continue the discussion on COVID-19. However, focus is going to be placed on women and the girl child. The conversation isn't going to end there. We're also going to touch on our issues with regards to women empowerment. And then, of course, we're going to be highlighting what's happening in our schools. Week 3, teachers are still protesting. So we're going to figure out, you know, we're going to try to highlight what exactly is happening in the schools. First up, health, chirwere che coronavirus, mkhuhlane we COVID-19. Now, according to John Hopkins University, over 37,860,000 people worldwide have contracted coronavirus. Over 1,081,000 people have died, and some positivity, over 26,321,000 people have recovered worldwide. Now, according to the most recent tweet issued by the Ministry of Health, Zimbabwe currently has over 8,000 COVID cases. The death toll currently is at 230, and over 7,620 have recovered. Now, the latest information released by the Ministry of Health, of course, does not show the cumulative amount of PCR tests conducted to date. However, they do highlight that 481 PCR tests were conducted yesterday alone, 10 cases tested positive, and a beautiful discovery, one thing they've managed to highlight in the data released yesterday, 1,122 people have recovered from COVID-19 with zero deaths. Now, that means that the country currently has 164 active coronavirus cases. So that's some good news over there. Now, Muri Zimbabwe, before we delve deeper and speak to our health experts as to how coronavirus has affected women and the girl child, let's head over to the COVID task force, the interministerial task force set up by President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Yesterday, they toured RGM, Robert Gabriel Mugabe International Airport, to kind of see if the international airport is ready to facilitate both local and international flights as the country slowly eases its lockdown restrictions. Let's head over to the Interministerial Task Force. Here, the next clip you're about to see is courtesy of the Ministry of Information on their Twitter page. You're about to hear from the Minister of Information, Honorable Monica Mchangwa, who's going to brief us a little more about what's happening with the Interministerial Task Force. Let's hear more from her.
We are very grateful for the tour because it has actually given us confidence as we speak to our public to assure them that, especially those who want to travel, both Zimbabweans who want to go outside, and those who are coming into the country, that your health is number one, is the priority number one. The airport has put all measures to make sure that they contain the spread of that disease. We are also happy that those who come into the country without that COVID-19 free certificate, they have an opportunity to be tested right here at the airport. And that process has been reduced to just 2.5 hours, and some I can say 2 hours. I think that is really good news to those who are intent to travel to Zimbabwe, to say as soon as you get at the airport, there are three laboratories who are all internationally recognized. We will test you, and the results will be out in 2 hours. And by that time, if you are COVID-19 free, you'll then be released home. But if you are positive, then the Ministry of Health will take you to their isolation centers where you will be taken care of.
So you're hearing there, that's what's happening in Zimbabwe. Just yesterday, the Interministerial Task Force took to RGM International Airport to kind of see, is the international airport ready to facilitate international and local flights? You heard there, it seems like it's ready to go. And another thing that Honorable Monica Mchangwa highlights is the fact that for those people who are going to be coming in and do not have their COVID certificates, there's going to be testing done at the at RGM International Airport. And what that means is for those that test positive, the Ministry of Health is going to be taking you into the quarantine centers. And for those that test negative, you get to proceed into the nation. Now, let's head over to our medical expert, our health expert, Constancia Maboza, who's going to touch on how coronavirus is currently affecting Zimbabwean women and the girl child. Now, it's important that today we highlight what's happening with the girl child. On Sunday was International Day of the Girl Child. Fine, let's head over to my interview with Constancia to hear more.
Well, first of all, it's a great thing to have information. I'm very big on decision-making that's informed by data. So the very fact that we do have information of what the numbers look like is like a positive, and that's a plus. Right. But more importantly, I think in Zimbabwe, we've been having almost like a stabilization of the COVID cases. Mm-hmm. So in this month alone, for example, there's only been one death. I think the highest number of cases we had was like on the 9th of October. I haven't checked the dates over the last 3 days, but like 32 new cases. So everyone right now is trying to stabilize and adapt to this new normal of living with a virus that we don't have a cure to yet, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost basically about prevention and management and trying to go back to normal lives. So, mm-hmm. so I think in that way, a little bit like most African countries and very different from Europe and America is that we didn't have the very high numbers, at least relative to like Europe and America, right? They stayed small, relatively speaking. But I think the numbers increasing in a country like Zimbabwe really had to do with just how weak our health system is. That if the numbers had continued to rise, we have a health system that's struggling and that would not be able to cope with severe disease of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So I think in that way, it's been, in as much as we've had all of these challenges, the idea that our numbers never really went out of control, in as much as we panicked and we saw community cases rising, it did not end up being like a bomb that burst. That's because cool. Really our health system would not have been able to manage if we'd had really, really high numbers. So fingers crossed they stay stable for a bit.
Would you say that as a country we've been able to manage it better so far?
That's a wild one, right? I think that with other countries, it might not necessarily be about a terrible health system or a struggling health system. Like other factors were coming into place, right? It's governance and leadership. It's decision making and what you choose to prioritize. So the health system might be strong, might be able to absorb. I mean, you can look at New Zealand, right? They did it well. They had a leader who was committed to controlling COVID-19 and they're pretty much back to normal life. Mm-hmm. At this point, whereas other countries are having like a second wave of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So I think with other countries and other situations, it wasn't necessarily that the health system is crippled, but if you actually have the finances, you have the technology, you have the resources, you have the health workforce, but it's really what decisions are you making to use all of those resources to contain and control COVID. So it's a little bit of a difference in the strategies in which people have been using, I guess, like I said, the stats and the information to deal with the COVID situation.
Now, let's delve into the reason I really brought you here, the healthcare system and how it was disrupted by COVID-19, especially when we're looking at women. How would you say COVID-19 disrupted the services that women receive when it comes to healthcare in Zimbabwe?
Yeah. Well, first I'm going to give you a disclaimer, right? Because women's access to healthcare services was already compromised pre-COVID. Okay. So we'll get to that later on, but I think it's very important that we start from that foundation. The same way COVID happened, and we were starting from a foundation of a weak health system. Mm-hmm. And that's how we need to view it. And what COVID-19 did about this compromised access to healthcare services for women is that it brought it to the forefront. So it was almost like a magnifying glass of things we knew already were existing. And that's what COVID really did, right? So about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, for example, city council clinics were completely shut down. And part of it, they were just, I mean, we already have our health workers who are on strike. That's number one. But the second part was just that council didn't have enough PPE to support all clinics being open. And you would have clinics that are open and they're only open for OI, so for arch refills. Right. So if you need anything from STI treatments, from other chronic care, if you needed contraceptives, if you needed menstrual health products, if you have a facility that offers that, all of that was no longer easily accessible. And those are like healthcare services that are very woman-centered in that way, right? So all of that was no longer easily accessible because your primary healthcare facility, the clinic in your community, if it's closed, you kind of have to figure out or geographically move to other places. And movement wasn't always easy, right? We had policing of movement, we had military everywhere. So if you needed to almost emergently or immediately access health services, that wasn't necessarily possible. And then another thing too, very early on into the pandemic. So of course we all know that the pandemic has been moving very rapidly and the situation, scenarios, all of that has been changing pretty quickly. But I remember in the very first week of at least the lockdown in Zimbabwe, and we had the country director for Marie Strauss, which is like the family planning organization in Zim. And he was saying that because everyone, when COVID became such a big issue and was basically announced as a pandemic, right, all borders shut down, right? Every country was just like no more movement is going to happen. But what that happened is we had all of these big organizations whose the entire Zimbabwe national system is dependent on Population Services Zimbabwe, Marie Strauss, to provide contraceptives. And they had containers stuck at ports of entry. Oh, right. And those couldn't move, right? And we're already existing in a situation in Zimbabwe where we've had a national shortage of contraceptives. It's already hard for young women to get access to contraceptives. And now you're trying to access it in an environment where there's a shortage. In an environment where you have an entire container that's stuck at a port of entry and you don't know for how long, because everyone is like, hold on, we need to figure out what to do with COVID-19. So those are some of the very like direct ways in which women, in which young women were directly impacted by COVID-19 and they couldn't access the health services they needed when they needed them to.
Now, another thing I want to touch on, because this month seems, this month is more about the girl child. So I'm going to get to how the disruptions are on the girl child are, but you touched on the lockdown itself. Now that all these lockdown regulations are slowly being eased, we see South Africa open their borders, Zimbabwe slowly easing all these different lockdown regulations. Has this thing in terms of the supply for healthcare services?
Yeah. So the way that I would approach that, like let's approach it from, has it improved access to health services for young women, right? This easing down of lockdown. Now, if you look at what access is, I'm going to use a framework that I always use when we're looking at access of health services. If you look at, so it's five A's, you have accessibility, which is just geographical location. Can you go to the clinic is like the first one. You have availability at the services, the commodities. Can I get my family planning? Is it available, right? That's the second one. You have accommodativeness. Health facility, healthcare service able to meet your needs, how you need them to, right? And then you have affordability. Can I afford to do it, right? And then you have acceptability. Do you like the service? It's a quality of service thing, right? Remember earlier on when I said that access to healthcare services already was compromised in Zim? So what the easing of the lockdown did is maybe it eased some of the A's and not all of them, right?
Okay.
Now we don't have as much police or military. So yes, I can move from my home to go to the clinic. So that was eased in terms of access. But the thing is, if I get to the clinic and there's still no commodities, it's not available, right? If I get to the clinic and I cannot afford consultation fee plus going to the pharmacy to get my contraceptive, it's not available. It's not affordable. Mm-hmm. So it's like, like I was saying, that what COVID did is like it magnified issues that we already knew we had in the health system. So you almost cannot COVIDize the solution because the problem existed before. You get it? Existed before. So it's like, yes, we eased lockdown measures, but the actual root of the problem still exists. Right. And in some ways, that needs to still be addressed to improve access to healthcare for women and for adolescent girls.
So now let's delve into the girl child herself. What's her biggest issue itself when it comes to access to healthcare in Zimbabwe? And of course, you just highlighted that the issues were there already pre-COVID. So
yeah.
Here.
there are a lot. So I work with young people quite a bit, and I get to interview them and to ask them like barriers to access, what makes you access something, what stops you from accessing something. And the very kind of big ones that I think are cross-cutting, I don't think it's just Zimbabwe. If you do a lot, if you read a lot of the research, a lot of African countries, you kind of get those barriers to access. So the first one can go something like judgmental providers. I'm a 16-year-old who's sexually active and I want contraceptive. And I'm going to my local clinic and the sister in charge is my mother's church best friend, right? So you can imagine how that conversation would have. Why are you having sex at 16? Why are you even coming to ask for contraceptives? So all of those issues, like you have young women who will tell you that, you know, I went and I wanted even like treatment for an STI and then the nurse announces it in the entire clinic and it becomes a public conversation. So very little privacy and confidentiality. The idea that you're going to be judged for your sexuality becomes a big issue. And then just in the Zimbabwean context, the fact that we already were existing within a socioeconomic pandemic before COVID happened, right? I can't afford to buy contraceptives. And now between the national shortage and the fact that the public sector doesn't have commodities, you almost always have to go buy it in the private sector. It's being charged in US dollars and you can't afford it. So it's all of these financial barriers. It's all of these very systemic, cultural, religious barriers that stop young women from accessing services. Even though we know that one in 10, 15 to 19 year old teenagers get pregnant in Zimbabwe. So teenagers are having sex, right? So it's almost like it's on the entire social system, the health system, the decision making bodies to start working from a foundation of young people are having sex. Mm-hmm. And how do we ensure that we don't end up with unintended pregnancies, unwanted pregnancies, STI infections, all of these other, I don't want to say terrible, but consequences of the fact that they are sexually active. And we can do that if we just improved access in certain ways.
So now let's get down to the solution. You just highlighted what one of the most important things of this interview cannot be. That is the solution. So the problem is not COVID, the problem is COVID. So
yes.
Where do we begin to address some of these issues, especially those that are primarily focusing and affecting the nation's youth?
So, like I said, and I will stick to it, we cannot COVIDize some of these solutions. I'm a very big health systems thinker. I very much believe that we need to think of access to healthcare as addressing the health system, right? And the health system is made up of six pillars, of which access to healthcare is just one of them, yeah? So like I was mentioning earlier, it's everything to do from, I don't know if I'll remember all six of them, but let's try, from like governance and leadership, right? Who's the decision maker and are their decisions centered around youth, or do they, are we making decisions that are youth-centered so that they work for young people in the health system, right? It's something like health financing. The Zimbabwean health system is very donor-dependent, right? When COVID happened, donors made whatever decisions they needed to make, from freezing, from refusing for funds to be repurposed or redirected towards COVID-19. So if you had an entire donor and your entire program was providing sexual and reproductive health to young people, and there's a lockdown, and the donor, because they also need to figure out how to respond to strategy to COVID, tells you we need to shut down and stop. It means for like the 6 weeks, for example, when we were in heavy COVID restrictions, you had young people who could not access sexual and reproductive health services, right? So with stuff like that, and then it's like the health service delivery, which of course we've already addressed with the five accesses issue, the information, research, surveillance, exactly the first question that you asked me, that what's the data that's there and how to use that information and that research to make decisions. So the idea is that you always have to be looking for solutions that are holistically approaching the health system. We can't approach it from like a vertical or siloed or disease specific or service specific type of solution. How are we making the health system better? It's our health workforce, pay the doctors and nurses, right? Like we have to be approaching all of those six blocks. How are you coming up with solutions for those? So that at the end of the day, we have a more resilient, is the word for it, health system, right? The next time a pandemic happens, and pandemics are inevitable. We don't know when the next one is coming, but at least you will have a health system that's able to absorb the shock of something like COVID-19 without completely crumbling down, without diverting the entire health workforce so that other healthcare services no longer have people serving it. Yeah. Right. So the idea is have a very resilient and robust health system. So regardless of what punches come at it, it's going to be able to still sustain. It's going to be able to still ensure that everyone has access to the health services that they need. So my solution would be very much health systems focused, and not even necessarily that it's quote unquote youth focused or quote unquote sexual and reproductive health focused. Mm-hmm. Fix the system, and then everything else will flow through that functioning system.
Right, makes sense. Yeah. As we wrap up our conversation, we have a lot of young people that are paying attention to you right now. A lot of girl childs that are listening to you right now, and they're looking for some advice. You being the health experts, what would be your parting words for these young people that are paying attention to our interview right now?
Yeah, so my parting words will be, inform yourself, right? So unfortunately, the system is not always going to support what you have to offer. It's the example that I was giving, right? That if you went to a healthcare facility and you needed healthcare services and you were met with a provider who's judgmental, who's going to judge you, it's a very different conversation. I'll give you an example. I went to a PZ clinic once and the provider was just like, yeah, I'm going to give you this, contraceptives, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, no, we need to sit down and you need to walk me through all of the contraceptives you have. What are the side effects? What are the pros and cons? So that I can make an informed decision about which one I take, right? But that's Connie who's empowered and wants the services that she wants and is able to articulate that. And you're not always going to have access to that. So my point of view is it's better to almost have a conversation with your provider where you come and say, oh, I read that this might have side effects. Is it possible if I take on this? Because then you give yourself more agency. You're a little bit more empowered. And that conversation may go a better way, especially if you can only access public health sector facilities. So inform yourself as much as possible. Never, ever be afraid to ask questions. There's never a wrong answer. You know, the worst that someone can say is no. Mm-hmm. So go for literally self-empowerment. Don't wait for someone to come and empower you and give you information. Look for the information. If you don't trust it, then you can ask who you need to ask. But look for that information so at least you can have conversations with people.
And what would you have to say to the young girl who goes looking for contraceptives, healthcare services, and is judged? What are you doing? You're 16. Why are you sleeping around? Blase, blase, blah. What would you say to her?
Yeah. Well, that's a hard one. So the law is supposed to protect you. So, I mean, it goes back to knowing your information, right? Because you could actually say, I am allowed to access services. I don't need my parents to be here. That, like, you could say what your rights are, that kind of thing. So what I would say is you are to challenge is the wrong word, but respond back, which goes against everything in our culture. But you are entitled to the health services that you need when you need them, right? The next option, especially if it's public sector, is maybe trying to figure out if there are very youth-centered and youth-centric programs that you might be eligible for, that you might qualify for, and go seek your health services there. Because chances are they're going to be free. Chances are the providers there are trained in youth friendliness, so they know how to engage with you without judging you. Like, it's very client-centered and client-focused. So that would be my option, that if you kind of don't know what the law is and what you can access and what your rights are, then my next one would be in your community, is there a health program that's very much centered and caters to youth? And usually with those programs, you have providers who are trained to engage with you, to not judge with you, to not judge you, to not have attitudes where you're concerned.
Sithanda ukubonga unkosazana Constancia Mabotza tinoda kutenda kutora mukana uno kutenda muzvare Constancia Mabotza nokupinda muchirongwa chedu. That was our Constancia Mabotza, our health expert, angachibata achinyatsozeya nyaya yekuti chirwere checoronavirus chakanganisa sei upenyu hwevanhukadzi pamwe chete nevanasikana. So ubetinda ngempela udaba lolu uConstancia echasisa ngempela ukuthi umkhuhlane lo weCOVID-19 usephazamise njani impilo zabesifazana kanye namankazana amantombazana elizweni. Ubethinta echasisa ngempela ukuthi sikhangela udaba lokuthi kwakule shortage yemithi. Even sikhuluma nje uyasho ngempela ukuthi ama-contraceptives ayahlupha ukutholakala phansi kohlelo lwe-lockdown olukhuthaza uZulu ukuthi ahlale ezindlini. So ubechasisa ngempela ukuthi iningi labesifazana babebhekene nalolu dubo lokuthi they could not access healthcare ngendlela elula. So that's what Constancia was saying. Saka ndizvo zvakachitsanangurwa namzvare Constancia Mabotza achinyatsotsanangura kuti vazhinji vanhukadzi nevanasikana vangachisangana nematambudziko akati wandei, the main one being access kune healthcare, kune mushonga wakafanana nemacontraceptives ayo anodzivirira kuti mwana ave nenhumbu. Saka ndizvo zvaanga achitsanangura Constancia, ndiwo maondero ake. Makateerera chirongwa chedu chero chidiki muri yeZimbabwe, uhlero The Connection, Musakanganwe. Vakada kutipawo maondero avo +12024650318 pawhatsapp, ndiyo nhamba yekutiroera yekutitumira mameseji pawhatsapp. Yourself uchiwarao and you think you might be displaying my symptoms as you relate to coronavirus, 2019 is the number to dial to find out more. Chirongwa The Connection, mwineni Mike Hove. So far, how has coronavirus affected the girl child munyika? But whilst we're still on the same discussion on the women and the girl child and women empowerment earlier on, I touched on the fact that that's another discussion we're going to have here on The Connection. On Sunday, it officially marks the International Day of the Girl Child, a day set aside by the United Nations, which targets towards highlighting strides made worldwide in terms of promoting and empowering the girl child, and also reminding people the work that still needs to be done in terms of, once again, promoting and empowering not just the girl child, but women in all. So let's head over to a video that we have courtesy of the United Nations, courtesy of the Twitter page of Amina J. Mohammed of the United Nations, whereby she was basically breaking down the importance of such a day and, of course, why it is important to empower the girl child and women in all. Let's hear more from Mrs. Mohammed.
As we mark the International Day of the Girl this year, I'm happy to see our focus on the diversity of adolescent girls' voices. Adolescent girls are anything but the same. Their diversity is one of their strengths, including geography, ethnicity, race, age, and disability. This year, 2020, has been dominated by the COVID-19 pandemic, which has caused unprecedented social and economic disruption. At the same time, global movements are raising their voices against inequality and for social justice. As we look forward to recovering from the pandemic, by creating more equal, sustainable, and inclusive societies, amplifying and unleashing the strength and power of this generation of 600 million adolescent girls has never been more important. Today's girls are global leaders on issues including the climate crisis, education for all, child marriage, racial injustice, and mental health. To girl leaders on the front lines and to all girls, I say, be bold in your demands, be confident in the steps that you are taking. Your solutions and ideas are essential to step up the pace of progress. But while there is progress to celebrate, there are also gaps that are holding back millions of adolescent girls around the globe. 2 out of 3 girls of secondary school age are in school today, up 1 in 2 in 1998. But in at least 20 countries, hardly any poor rural young woman complete secondary school. And even in middle and higher income countries, only 14% of girls who were top performers in science, technology and mathematics expected to work in those fields, compared to 26% of top performing boys. Adding to these gaps, 4 million teenage girls are now at risk of early marriage due to COVID-19, further curtailing their life chances and aspirations. As we celebrate the achievements and potential of girls, we must keep up the pressure for change. The United Nations stands together today with your generation of girls and for a better and a more equal future for all.
So, Muriem, in Zimbabwe, you're hearing there from Mrs. Amina J. Mohammed of the United Nations. The International Day of the Girl Child. That was this Sunday, whereby she was highlighting the strides that have been made so far, not just in Zimbabwe, but across the whole world in terms of girl child empowerment, in terms of women empowerment. Now, if you're wondering what's happening, Munyekedu, Zimbabwe, at this year's 75th UNGA sessions, the United Nations General Assembly, President Emmerson Mnangagwa highlighted a couple of strides that the government has made so far in terms of empowering women and, of course, what the Zimbabwean government is doing so far. Now, is that enough? I look to hear more from my panelists. But before we head over to the panelists, let us head over to what President Emmerson Mnangagwa had to say at the 75th session of the United Nations General Assembly. The next clip you're about to watch is courtesy of the United Nations YouTube page. Let's take it up.
As we celebrate the 25th anniversary of the 4th World Conference on Women on 1st October this year, I'm gratified to highlight that Zimbabwe has taken major steps in implementing the Beijing Declaration. These include the adoption of a gender-responsive constitution, establishment of the Zimbabwe Gender Commission, enactment of several pieces of legislation to outlaw all practices that infringe on the rights of women and girls, such as forced and child marriages and discrimination against women in inheritance matters. My government has also set up a women's bank to facilitate access to finance by women owned businesses and projects.
Zimbabwe, you were just hearing there from our President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who was highlighting some of the strides that have been made by the Uhulumende wakhe. Now, to also back up some of the information what was uttered by President Emmerson Mnangagwa at this year's UNGA session, Sige Sakhuma, Minister of Women and Small to Medium Enterprises, Mamusten Sonyoni, and she touched on two different things. One of them being that uHulumende kaMongameli Emmerson Mnangagwa, President Mnangagwa's government, is working hard to bring equality in between the girl child and her counterpart, that being the boys. She also touched on some of the laws that are currently being worked on by the government, which is the sexual harassment bill and, of course, gender equality bill, which our government is looking to bring into play to ensure that some of these strides that are there, that government is looking to accomplish, comes to play. So is that enough? Is that enough? Is that enough? Is the question at hand? So I see when we see Omunye, esigesa kuluma naye, uSibonobuhle Buhlungu, wenhlanganiso ye Whispers. What is her thoughts in terms of the International Day of the Girl Child? Jalo udaba lokuthuthukiswa kwabesifazana labantombazana elizweni.
Nxa ngikhangele elizweni lethu lezi udaba oluzama ukuthi lungeniswe kubana uzulu alwamukele kodwa akuchiphanga kuyazama ukuba kwenzakale siyabona nje ukuba abantwana bamankazana sebezama ukuthola amathuba but akukafiki kulapho esikhangelele khona thina njengabakhokheli benhlanganiso ezisebenza labantwana bangamankazana yebo ye udaba lakhona luyangeniswa kancane kancane emisebenzini ezidaweni zesikolo lapho abantwana bafundela khona kodwa akukafiki ekwamukele leni kakhulu ukuba abantwana lawo bangamankazana bathole amathuba alingana lawo esidlisa
nxa sesikhangela izikhundla zobukhokheli elizweni hathi kwezombusazwe kuphela kodwa sikhangela kwezamabhizimusi kanye lendawo ezijeneyo bakhona na abesifazana abayeneleyo
ubukhokheli elizweni bakhona ye abesifazana asebengenile kodwa abakeneli ngokusuthisayo bakhona nje ukuthi la uyathola ukubana ezigabeni ezinje kukhona abesifazana abakhona kodwa inani lakhona alihambelani labesilisa uyathola ukuthi engxenye lapho kule besilisa abali chumi uzathola kulabesifazana kumbe ababili ukweneliswa kwethu kuma numbers abesilisa labesifazana akukafiki esigabeni esithabisayo njalo esijabulisayo amakhampani amaningi lamabhizinisi amaningi abakaqali ukuthathela ukuthi labo babone ukuthi hayi abesifazana bayakhonelisa ukuthi bakhokhele kumbe bayenelisa ukuba yibo ababele nani eliningi kudlula abesilisa sisasilela especially elizweni lethu leZimbabwe ukuthi sikwanise ukuyananisa inamba lelo ukuba kube le representation ehambelanayo phakathi kwabesilisa labesifazana.
Qhiba ingxoxo yethu sibo ngokusitshela ukuthi kuyini okumele kwenziwe elizweni ukuthuthukisa abesifazana. Njalo njengenhlanganiso elwela amalungelo abesifazana, lilethemba nalo ukuthi lokho kulakho kufezeka.
Okumele kwenzakale elizweni ukuba abesilisa kumele basamukele thina abantu besifazana. Babone lokuthi silazo ingqondo lokukhalipha okwanele ukubana sikwanise ukukhokhela lokuyenza izinqumo ezithuthukelisa amabhizinisi kanye lelizwe thina njengelungelo labesifazana ithemba silalo ukuba lokhu kuzafezeka ngoba nxa sisebenza labantwana bangamankazana suku ngosuku siyabakhuthaza ukuba loba kusesikolo loba kusemakampani nabo basukume labo phezulu nxa kuthiwa kulezikhundla ezifuna ukuthathwa bengesabi ukuba izikhundla lezi ayisizo zabo ngezabantu besilisa silalo ithemba kakhulu ukuba eminyakeni elandelayo especially singakhangela ukubana ngomnyaka ka-2020 sibe labo abethu abantwana abakwanisileyo ukubusa emankampanini abo ku-2019 sibe naye umntwana oye-university okwanisileyo ukuthi labo abe ngu-president wama-students kodwa yena ngesifazana into engazake iyenze so siqhubekela phambili siyabakhuthaza abantwana bethu abangamankazana kube kusezindlini kube kusima communities ukuba bathathele labo phambili bengameleli ukuphiwa izikhundla but ezinye bazicreate labo kuma communities kuma businesses even lasema positions awe kubuswa kwelizwe siyabakhuthaza ukuthi bathathe ama position okufuna ukuba ngokhansela ukuba ngoMP even ukuba ngabo president.
All right, Maria Zimbabwe, sithanda ukubonga usibono kuhle uhlungu enhlanganiso ye-Whispers ngokungena kuhlelo. Maria Zimbabwe, nditulo zwanga zvitaurwa ka namzvare sibono kuhle buhlungu wanga uchinyatsoziyama undro avo pamusoro pezvenyaya yekusimudzirwa kwevanhukadzi pamwe chete nevana vasikana munyika. Iye ari kuhighlighta hake achiti ari kufara achiona kuti makore masha within the past couple of years varipo havo vanasikana vakasimuka vakapiwawo mikana yekuvawo muzvigaro zveutongi mumasangano akasiyana-siyana uyezve munyaya dzepolitics. Tiri panyaya imwe chete iyoyo yevanasikana uyezve vanhukadzi vachipiwawo gabi kana yekusimudzira takabata muzvare abiona mataranyika mutungamiriri wesangano reSRC Student Representative Council ukoka kuUniversity of Zimbabwe abiona mataranyika ndiye wekutanga wechikadzi the first female president at the University of Zimbabwe. So I reached out to Abiona so that we could hear her thoughts on the whole discussion around women empowerment and the whole discussion around the empowerment of the girl child in Zimbabwe. Let's hear what Abiona had to say about the matter.
Vanasikana vari kusangana nematambudziko akawanda chaizvo ayo anosanganisirwa kubatwa kwechibharo, kushungurudzwa, kudzikisirwa. nekungoitwa ivo kunge zvinhu zvisina basa mudzimba umu nehama dzavo kana neavo vavanogara nawo. Uyezve zvakare mwanasikana varikusangana nedambudziko rekushaya zvekushandisa avo pavanenge vasvika panguva iya yekupera kwemwedzi. Saka tinoona kuti aya matambudziko ari kusangana neanasikana akati wandei ende atinoda kuti agoonekwa achigadziriswa.
Sangano reUnited Nations rinoti zuva iri rakanangana nekukurudzira pasi rose kuti vape vanasikana mikana yakaenzana nevana mukomana yekusimudzira. Nemaonderenyu mungati izvi zviri kuitika munyika here?
Ndinoona sekunge zviri kuitika zvishoma nezvishoma, asi tichiri nepakasarira apo panoda kugadziriswa. Izvo tinoona kuti kune vanhu rume nevamwe vanhu vasati vagamuchira pfungwa iyo yekuti mwanasikana anofanira kusimudzirwa uye mabasa ake haasingori kuita mabasa emumba nezvekuroorwa kana mamwe mabasa aya emudzimba, asi anoda kusimudzirwawo mukurarama umu kuti akwanisa achiita mamwe mabasa akasiyana-siyanawo tichifambirana nenguva kuti mwanasikana anofanirawo kutoenda kubasa achitsvaga mari yake uye achiwana zvimwe zvinzvimbo mabasa. Izvo zvatakangokura zvichionzi ndezvevarume.
Zvii zvingaitwa kusimudzira vanasikana munyika?
Ini ndinofunga kuti zvatingaita kuti tisimudzire vana ava ndezvekuita kuti tirambe tichiita zvirongwa zvinoita kuti tisimudzire vana vechisikana. Izvo zvinoitwa nevanhu vakasiyana-siyana munyika dzakasiyana-siyana, uyezve avo madzimai ava muzvinzvimbo zvikuru zvekuti vanhu vakawanda vanotarisa pavari. Ndinovakurudziravo kuti vaonekewo vachishandisawo mikana iyoyo yavakawana kuti vasimudzire vamwe vana vechisikana kuti vagonekwa vachidawo kuzvisimudzira uye nekuita zviri nani neupenyu hwavo.
Tichitarisa mashoko akataurwa nemutungamiriri wenyika vaEmmerson Mnangagwa gore rino kuchirongwa cheUnited Nations General Assembly, vakabata nyaya yezvirongwa zvakasiyana-siyana zviri kuitwa nebazi rinoona nezvekusimudzirwa kwevanhukadzi, pamwe chete nebhanga reEmpowerment Bank. Nemaonderenyu, hurumende yeZimbabwe iri kushanda nemazvo mukusimudzira vanasikana pamwe chete nevanhukadzi here?
Tinoda kutenda nezvirongwa zvatiri kumboona zvichiitwa zvekusimudzira madzimai, asi sekuona kwangu ndinoti tichiri nebasa guru rekuti tisimudzire madzimai, nekuti tikada kutarisa zvematongerwo enyika unoona kuti madzimai mashoma ende zvinhu zvinofanira kugadziriswa kuti tione tichienderera mberi. Saka ndoti ngatishande nesimba patiri pataita pacho ngatipawedzerei kuti vakadzi vaonekwe vachiwanikwa muzvirongwa izvi.
Semutungamiri wekutanga wechikadzi wesangano rinomirira vadzidzi pachikoro cheUZ, ndeapi mashoko amungada kusiyira vanasikana vari kuteerera hurukuro yedu?
Mashoko anengada kusiyira vanasikana vari kuteerera hurukuro yedu muzuva ranhasi ndevekuti zvona ngatishande nesimba tibvise pfungwa dzekuti vakadzi basa ravo nderekubika nekugara pamba, asi tishande nesimba kuti tionekewo tichibuda kunze uku tichitora zvinzvimbo izvo zvakasiyana-siyana, nekuti munhu wechisikana hapana chaasingagoni. Saka ngatishande nesimba, hapana chinombotyisa, hapana chinombotitadzisa. Ngatishande nesimba tiwanikwa tichiona zvinzvimbo izvi.
Abiona Mataranyika, the first female president of the University of Zimbabwe. She was highlighting her thoughts on the International Day of the Girl Child and, of course, the discussion around women and the empowerment of the girl child in Zimbabwe. And the Ashika, yekuti vanasikana tishande mushande nemazvo mukuratidza pasi rose kuti aiwa, girls can do it too. So those are the thoughts of Abiona Mataranyika. But now, as mentioned throughout this whole discussion by, we heard from Abiona Mataranyika, we heard from Sponoguse, women are venturing into different fields of career paths and, you know, encountering different challenges. So I reached out to someone in the arts sector to hear what kind of challenges are the girl child, are women encountering in the arts sector. Let's head over to an interview that I had with Samantha Mandivei of the Voice to Rep project. She's the project's coordinator of the organization itself. Let's hear what Samantha had to say.
This day is important because we still have a long way to go in terms of the girl child having access to the opportunities and being made aware of the things that are out there that they're able to be a part of. So yeah, I think recognizing this day is really important, but with it, I think that some of the reforms or the policies or some of the things that we can do practically to actually give women or girl children platforms in the creative sector are equally important.
Now, we see the United Nations themselves highlighting that this day is targeted towards highlighting equality, giving equal opportunities to the girl child the same way that they do the, I guess, their male counterparts. In your opinion, do you think this is happening, not just in Zimbabwe alone, but across the world?
I think I can mostly speak for Zim.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that it's starting to happen. I can't say that we're quite there yet, because as much as there are opportunities that are coming up for the girl child, I think what I'm seeing from my own experience is that there's still not equal access. So, for example, young girls don't have equal access to the internet, which are some of the places where they find these opportunities or these things are put up there. Like if there are call outs for young girls to participate in things, it's put on the internet, and that equal access is still not there. So which means that the girls don't know what's out there. So yeah, I think we're starting, but I think we have a long way to go.
Now, you're in the creative space, in the arts sector.
Yes.
Could you highlight a little more in terms of the challenges that the girl child faces, in especially for those looking to venture into the arts sector?
Yeah, I think it's got a. From what I've seen, for example, for the project that I run, where we were asking young women to participate in a music competition, and we had about only 16% of women submit applications, as opposed to, you know, the men who just like over 50% are submitting. And you find, like I had mentioned earlier, access, they don't have access. So they're not getting all the information, whether it's on radio, on the internet, on television. And also they have a lot more things that hinder them from doing those things. For example, that confidence of feeling like, you know, they're good enough or they're capable of participating and things like that. They have a lot more responsibilities. You find like in countries like Zimbabwe, girls have more responsibilities, whether it's cleaning or cooking or taking care of the siblings. So there's a lot more things that kind of get in the way that hinder them from having that equal access to those same opportunities.
Now, when we talk, you've highlighted the challenges, but how then do we fix it to ensure that as per the requirements of the day, there is equality in terms of opportunities for both the girl child and their male counterparts?
I think we need to put in a lot more effort in reaching out to young girls. I think we need to go beyond the internet. We need to go beyond radio. I think we need to physically reach out to these specific communities where we find these girls, whether it's in schools, in their homes, and like find ways to access them, meet them where they are, you know, and bring them out, basically kind of bring them out into what we are trying to get these young girls to be a part of, you know, equip them so that they feel more confident, you know, give them access to studio spaces, to equipment, whether they're in the film industry, whether they're painters and artists. They need some of these girls, that those basic things they don't have access to. So creating spaces that give these girls access, giving them access to hubs where they can access the internet, even things as simple as transportation to get to these places. So yeah, I think it's a lot more of us putting in that extra effort just to give them that access.
All right, Maria Zimbabwe, you just heard there from Samantha Mandiwei of Voice True Rep. She is the project coordinator, touching on the importance of empowering the girl child. Now, Pano Pachonga, early on, I also highlighted Shange Chitarisa, Zirikwitika Muzvikoromo. Zimbabwe schools have officially hit week 3 with no teachers in class.
Zimbabwe, like other African countries, is trying a first reopening of schools after closing in March due to COVID-19. But many teachers like Mnyarazi Masiwa are refusing to return to class because of low pay and unsafe sanitary conditions. He says he makes more money selling brooms than teaching.
We have got the zeal. We love the kids at school. But only if the government manages to capacitate us. We are under incapacitation situation.
Zimbabwe's teachers say they want at least $500 per month and ample personal protective equipment, PPE, against COVID-19. Zimbabwe's cash-strapped government says it has procured $6 million worth of PPEs for schools, and it says teacher salaries about $100 a month, including a $75 COVID-19 allowance, is all it can afford.
It is within this context that we are saying to the civil servants, please be realistic, exercise, moderation in the manner in which you demand salary increases. We don't want salary increases that will upset the stability that we have so far realized.
Without teachers in class, Zimbabwe's school children are the ones left paying the price. Students say they only discuss lessons among themselves. Their parents worry the children won't learn enough to pass their exams.
I just wish the government can negotiate with the teachers so that our children can learn. I want them to look after us in the future.
Zimbabwe's government has threatened to replace defiant teachers like Masiwa if they don't soon return to the classrooms. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
All right, Maria Zimbabwe, shout out to Columbus Mavunga, VOA correspondent in Zimbabwe, who was basically speaking to some of the teachers and also highlighting what government is saying in terms of how they can, what they're willing to manage. You heard he was highlighting that government says, you know what? We can only afford 100 US and 75, of course, as the PPE and COVID allowance that comes down to 175. But Rara Iris, why don't you, Bodo, Chuda 580, Chuda more than above $500, they're talking about Tambira. Let's head over to an interview that I had with one of the educators who basically explains as to why they are really pleading incapacitation and, of course, what this all means to her. We reached out to Melissa Chingwanangwana, who is an educator in Zimbabwe. Let's hear what Melissa had to say.
When you mention our salary as 45 US dollars, it sounds as if we get 45 US dollars hard cash, which is not the case. We actually get our money through our bank accounts, and in order to access that money, you have to either use it through EcoCash or you swipe or you go and withdraw from the bank, which is very difficult considering that you have to stand for hours and hours in a queue just to get a measly 500 in cash, which by the time you get home, you would have used half of that on transport alone. Our money is actually given to us in bond. I personally get 3,600 in my account at the end of the month. And from 3,600, I have to buy mealie meal. So in order to get mealie meal, 10 kgs, I have to use 500 bond. In order to get 2 liters cooking oil, I have to use 300 bond. And then if I want to buy sugar, I pay 200 and something bond, which is almost 300 bond. In order to get groceries that last for a month, it means I have to use more than 3,600. And that is just groceries alone, before I even talk about water bills and electricity bills. And most people are using prepaid electricity, as you know, the rates went up. How does a teacher survive on 3,600, where they have to pay for electricity, water, rent, and also buy food from that money?
How do you feel about government's attempts to negotiate with educators to ensure that all are able to go back to school? This, of course, is following the money given last week and the meetings that government is having with teachers' unions. Do you feel as though that there's promise that your demands will be met?
Okay, negotiations have been done so many times. I think that avenue has been abused by our employers. That has been used as a tactic of getting us to go back to work, of making us think that things are now getting back on track, or making us think that something will come out of it. But I know I speak for a lot of teachers when I say that negotiations are just a waste of time, because I'm sure by now they know how bad things are. We've been talking about this for the longest time, and anyone living in Zimbabwe knows that anyone who gets a salary of 3,600 is certainly finding it hard to survive in this difficult time. So negotiations really, I feel, are a waste of time. The employer knows our plight, and at this point, the best thing is to give us what we need.
Now, Melissa, the examination dates are getting closer by the day. Teachers are still not in schools, meaning students are not preparing appropriately for these examinations. We have heard some experts and fellow educators propose that examinations be moved to 2021 because they feel as though after everything that has happened in 2020, ranging from the closing of schools through to teachers currently striking, students are not going to be well prepared for these examinations. As an educator, what is your opinion on this?
Opening schools was definitely not a good idea, considering the amount of teaching and learning time that has been lost since we closed schools in March. And even before that, teachers had already declared incapacitation and there wasn't much teaching and learning taking place. So the whole of the 2020 academic year has been lost. And to open schools on the 28th and expect exams to be written starting from the 1st of December is suicide, really, because there are a lot of things, a lot of factors that needed to be considered first before allowing children to go back to school. So unions have made recommendations. The first thing that has been recommended, the best thing to do right now, is to close schools. After closing schools, the next step would be to have genuine negotiations with unions over the issue of teacher salaries. And then thirdly, examinations should be pushed to 2021 so as to allow learners enough time to prepare for examination, and also ask teachers to prepare and give our learners what they need in order to write exams. And then also the government should appoint a task force to look into the safety of schools. I mean, we're living in the COVID-19 era right now, and it's something that has to be done before we can just dive in back into the school environment. Every school, even the most remote school in the rural areas, do they have enough PPEs? Do they have enough infrastructure to practice social distancing? How are the risks being reduced in this COVID-19 era? That all has to be looked at.
Now, government time and time again has highlighted that they're incapable of paying civil servants in US dollars because they do not print the money. If government cannot give in to those demands that you're asking for to be paid for, is there anything else that can be done to get you as an educator to return to the classroom?
It would only be fair if we were given the equivalent of that in local currency, and it should be calculated according to prevailing rates. That would be fair.
As we wrap up our conversation, what parting words do you have for students and parents that are all feeling anxious right now because of the teacher strike and the approaching examination dates?
To the students and parents, this is our fight. We need to help one another. We are all affected one way or the other. As teachers, we're also parents, and we would love for things to be normal and for us to be back in the classroom and doing our job because we love our job. We would love to be in the classroom right now and doing everything that we can to help our children to pass and go to the next level. But at this point, we need to help one another and work together and come up with a lasting solution. We need as much support as we can from the parents and from the students so that we can all be happy at the end of the day.
All right, Maria Zimbabwe, shout out to Melissa Chumanangwana for joining us here, giving us a little more in-depth understanding as to why they, as educators, are choosing not to go to school. We are showing Mbelu Melissa, we are trying to see at least that 3,000 bond. And just for her to get by, it costs way above 3,000. So we are showing Mbelu Uti, hi, Agum Jabulisi, and Adengumbali, Uti, Yena Uhola, 3,000, Ota Uti, I will touch him alian corner. By the time she returns home, now ama bills are for example, we are shooting at Tenga, ama grosser, and she also pays for electricity and so forth. Imali ake isiphelile before she's done even anything else with it. Tashika kuma kumo echirongwa chedu cha nasi muri Zimbabwe tinoda kutenda munhu wese apinda muchirongwa chedu cha nasi nasi muchirongwa chakatichibata nyaya yezvechirwere che coronavirus focusing on the girl child tichionawo kuti chirwere ichi checoronavirus chakanganisa sei upenyu hwevanasikana pamwe chete nevanhukadzi. Tazeyawo zvekare kukosha nyaya yekukosha kwekusimudzirwa kwevanhukadzi pamwe chete nevanasikana munyika, tikagumauka nehurukuro nemurayiridzi zvare Merisa Chimwanamwana achitibatsirawo achitipawo ruzivo ruzhinji kuti chii chiri kunyatsoita kuvarayiridzi vagonongone, chii chiri kunyatsoita kuti varayiridzi vati bodo havasi kuenda kuchikoro. We've come to an end to our program, Muriye Zimbabwe. Unfortunately, my time here is up. Nonetheless, you can meet me on social media on Twitter at BigMike3, BigMike3. That is Twitter and Instagram. Let's meet same time, same place. Pano pachirongwa chedu chevechipiki muineni Mikeove anogoneka ine mufaro ndinowanyuwa Mikeove Muriye Zimbabwe tsvakazomuse. Bye bye.